Hare Krishna, everyone. This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Grantharaj, the king of all Shastra scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 5, entitled Narad Muni Cursed by Prajapati Daksha. Okay. Text 23. Isam nisamya putranam naradach chila shalinam anvatapyata kashochan suprajashtvam suchampadam. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Haryashvas, the sons of Prajapati Daksha, were very well-behaved, cultured sons. But unfortunately, because of the instructions of Narada Muni, they deviated from the order of their father. When Daksha heard this news, which was brought to him by Narada Muni, he began to lament. Although he was the father of such good sons, he had lost them all. Certainly this was lamentable. Purport. The Haryashvas, the sons of Prajapati Daksha, were certainly well-behaved, learned and advanced, and in accordance with the order of their father, they went to perform austerities to beget good sons for their family. But Narada Muni took advantage of their good behavior and culture to properly direct them not to be involved in the material world, but to use their culture and their knowledge to end their material affairs. The Haryashvas abided by the order of Narada Muni, but when news of this was brought to Prajapati Daksha, the Prajapati, instead of being happy with the actions of Narada Muni, was extremely sorrowful. Similarly, we are trying to bring as many young men as possible to the Krishna conscious movement for their ultimate benefit. But sometimes the parents of the young men joining this movement become very sorry and are lamenting and making counter-propaganda. Of course, Prajapati Daksha did not make propaganda against Narada Muni, but later, as we shall see, Daksha cursed Narada Muni for his benevolent activities. This is the way of materialistic life. Materialistic father and mother want to engage their sons in begetting children, striving for improved economic conditions, and rotting in materialistic life. They're not unhappy when their children become spoiled, useless citizens, but they lament when they join the Krishna conscious movement to achieve the highest goal of life. This animosity between parents and the Krishna conscious movement has existed since time immemorial. Even Narada Muni was condemned, not to speak of others. Nevertheless, Narada Muni never gives up his mission. To deliver as many souls as possible, he continues playing his musical instrument and vibrating the transcendental sound, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. So this is, of course, a very interesting verse and purport, especially the purport, because here we see Srila Prabhupada doing something a little unusual in his commentaries. He's sharing with us a personal experience and some of his personal realizations. Generally, as the BBT trustees, those who are in charge of publishing our spiritual master's books, and their teams will tell you, in his translation work, Prabhupada stuck very closely to the commentaries of the previous acharyas. Actually, Prabhupada's purports were more or less summaries of the previous acharyas, like Sridhar Swami, the first commentator on Srimad Bhagavatam 1,000 years ago, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or his own Guru Maharaj, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Prabhupada traveled with their books. In those days, there were no computers. So in order to write his purports, he would carry the commentaries of all these acharyas in one big suitcase, very big suitcase, very heavy. Prabhupada's luggage was always overweight, but not with nonsensical things that had been picked up here and there, but with the real treasure house of love of God, these shastras, these scriptures, which were pregnant with transcendental knowledge. I know, because one time I had to carry that suitcase. In London, I flew with Prabhupada from New York to London, and somehow or other that suitcase went missing. So when we got to London airport, Prabhupada requested that I stay behind and try to find the suitcase. And I was a little upset. I didn't express it to Srila Prabhupada. That wouldn't be possible, because Prabhupada was going to the temple. There would be a grand reception, you can imagine. And I'd heard that the Beatles were going to be there. John Lennon and Paul McCartney, Ringo Starr, George Harrison. So I had a mixed motive. I wanted to see the Beatles and see how they responded to the association of my spiritual master. But Prabhupada said, no, you stay and you wait for the suitcase, because Prabhupada was, one of his main contributions to spreading the Krishna conscious movement was these books. This movement is founded on this shastra. This is what gives our movement authority. It's founded in the ancient scriptures of India. The commentaries of these great realized souls, acharyas. So everybody left, and I waited 2 hours. Finally, that suitcase came. And I was a young man. I was 20 years old and healthy and strong. And I looked at that suitcase and I, you suitcase, you, because of you, I'm going to miss, you know, my spiritual master's class and the kirtan. And I heard that Jamuna Devi was cooking the feast and the Beatles. So I took that suitcase and I tried to lift it. I could hardly lift it. So I called for a porter, and he put the suitcase on this, you know, trolley, thank you. And took it to the taxi, and it was raining out. By this time it was evening, it was dark. And put it in the taxi, and I was sitting kind of grumpy in the back seat, and the taxi driver, he looked back, he said, young man, is everything okay? I said, no. I missed my spiritual master's class. He said, what's a spiritual master? So we had a nice conversation. The Lord takes advantage of these things. All the way to the temple, and this was 7 Bury Place. This is our first temple in London. When I got there, I took the suitcase out of the car and literally dragged it to the door of the temple and came in. And when I came in, the devotees were all sitting around their plates of prasadam, which were finished. You know, they were paper plates, so you could see the devotees' fingers streaking through the plate where the ghee was. And I walked in and everyone looked at me. And I said, oh, Prabhu, is there any prasadam left? Oh, no, but it was really good. That's the best feast Jamuna Devi ever cooked. I said, there's not even one. No, sorry, we didn't know you were coming. Oh, and I was tired. It was a long flight, and I'd had to wait, and hadn't showered. And so I said, okay, can someone help me take this suitcase upstairs to Prabhupada's room? Oh, Prabhu, we're too full. We can't walk. Oh, we can't move. And I said, oh, really? Oh, sorry, Prabhu. So where's Prabhupada's room? So Prabhupada's room was on the third or fourth story. And in those old London buildings, you know, that everything's very small in the old buildings in England. So the steps were like really steep and very small steps. So, it, you know, I took that suitcase and step by step, I dragged it up four stories. And by the time I got to that, I was just reeling. And then I saw that there was a brass plaque, and it said, His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So I concluded this is my spiritual master's room. So being tired and, well, being neophyte, I just opened the door. And I dragged the suitcase in backwards. I should have knocked, waited for the reply, and come in, but I was a boy, naive. And as I'm dragging the suitcase into Prabhupada's room, I hear someone say, "Watch out! You're going to bump into Srila Prabhupada." So I turned around, and there was Prabhupada standing in his gumsha. He was about to take his massage. And, you know, Prabhupada was not very tall. In diminution, he was sort of, he was small. But when I turned around, he looked gigantic. Just his countenance, his aura, his, it seemed like he was illuminated. He was shining, and smile on his face. And I immediately fell down at his lotus feet. And I started, you know, saying my pranam mantra, Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Vishnaya, Buddhaya, Srimati, Bhakti Vedanta Swami. And Prabhupada's feet didn't move. They stayed there. And all of a sudden, on my back, Prabhupada slapped me. And he hit me really hard. Prabhupada was elderly, but he was full of strength, material and spiritual strength. And when he went on walks with Prabhupada in the morning, we were young men, we couldn't give up. But he slapped me very hard. So because the slap was so hard, it's right back here. I thought if I ever got a tattoo, I'd get the tattoo of that hand mark on my back. But I didn't ever get a tattoo. So then Prabhupada said something. I thought he was displeased because the slap was so hard. So then he said something, and I couldn't hear it. And then I waited a few moments out of fear. And then Prabhupada's lotus feet turned around, and he walked away. So I'm thinking, that suitcase. You know, it caused me so much misery. Now I've offended my guru. So then finally I stood up, and Prabhupada's servant Nanda Kumar was there, and his eyes were wide open. He said, "Srila Prabhupada slapped you on the back." I said, "Yeah, I know." He said, "I never saw him do that before." I said, "Oh, really?" And he said something very wonderful. "Oh," because I was expecting the chastisement. He said, "You said something very wonderful." I said, "Oh, I couldn't hear. What did he say?" The Nanda Kumar smiled. He said, "Prabhupada told you, so much endeavor in this material world, but when I take you back to Godhead, everything will be easy and sublime." So I thanked the suitcase. All that endeavor. Prabhupada was referring, obviously he could see that suitcase. He knew how heavy it was and how much it had taken as a single man to bring it to the... And for that insignificant service, he slapped me on the back and acknowledged that this material world is a difficult place, but when he takes all of us back to the spiritual world, everything will be easy and sublime. So I have firsthand knowledge of, you know, that Prabhupada would take all the commentaries of the Acharyas with him around the world in order to do his translating work. And he would stick to those commentaries. When he would read the verse, then he would read several commentaries, he would summarize them. But very rarely he would put something personal in. He would often say, "My credit is that I have not added anything or subtracted anything. It is all perfect." Of course, there was no harm, there was only benefit when Srila Prabhupada, on rare occasions, chose to add something to the commentaries of the previous acharyas, because obviously Prabhupada was most qualified. He was a fully realized pure devotee of the Lord. And on a number of occasions, he did, like we see today. Here we see how, we read how the Aryashvas, the sons of Prajapati Daksha, were being, as Prabhupada said, groomed to be successful in material life by their father, Daksha. But Narada Muni, that transcendental personality who travels throughout both worlds, the material world and the spiritual world, and while in the material world tries to reclaim fallen conditioned souls, he happened to meet those boys as they were off to college, and he turned their attention to the Absolute Truth. And he inspired them to achieve the ultimate goal of life, Panam Gatim, pure devotional service to the Lord. So they gave up their material ambitions, and they became devotees. And as a result, being the parent, Daksha, not understanding the value of becoming a devotee of the Lord, that one fulfills all one's desires, one's deeper spiritual desires, one fulfills the mission of human form of life, he was very upset with Narada Muni. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, again, this is something very personal, very topical. Prabhupada writes, similarly, we are trying to bring as many young men and women as possible to the Krishna conscious movement for their ultimate benefit. But the parents of the young men joining this movement, being very sorry, are lamenting and making counter propaganda. So special. I mean, when we read these things, for us it's a glimpse into Prabhupada's heart, some personal experience, some personal realization. We like it when he does that. And by Prabhupada's making personal comments or contributions to these purports, this is not unprecedented. For example, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.294, he also does the same thing. He was also using the commentaries of previous acharyas, but of course he gave many of his own elaborate realizations and purports. But in that particular verse in the what is now the Nectar of Devotion, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur wrote about a group of so-called Gaudiya Vaishnav devotees who at the time, this is the 1700s, were saying, there's no need to follow many rules and regulations. You just imitate the perfected souls and you will attain perfection. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he didn't like that philosophy. We have to make advancement by sticking closely to the rules and regulations, being very disciplined, etc. Slow but steady wins the race. But they're saying, just imitate great souls and very quickly you'll be. He didn't like that. So he says, Adu Nikasho Ramya Matan Api Nirashtam. The modern day, this is the 1700s, the modern day group named Soramya Vada, they're a deviation and I don't approve of them. So he also made topical comments in his writings. It's not, it wasn't unprecedented when Prabhupada said something personal in his purports. Another example is Srila Jiva Goswami in his Tattva Shandarbha, where he says, Tattra cha Veda sabdhasya samprapti dushparadavat. Due to the difficulty which is experienced in modern times, you know, this is what, 500 years ago, in obtaining all the portions of the Vedas, and due to the difficulty one experiences in studying them, and due to the conflicting opinions of many commentaries, I say that in modern times, this is 500 years ago, we should simply meditate on the meanings of the words that are given in the Puranas and the Itihasas, which are themselves Vedic, and help one to ascertain the deeper meaning of the Vedas. In other words, you don't have to read all the Vedas. In Kali Yuga, you just read the Puranas and the Itihasas, which are in accordance with the Vedic scriptures, and you can become Krishna conscious. So he's referring to the 1400s as modern times and giving his commentary. So my point is that Prabhupada was not unprecedented what he did. When you you know, you're reading Bhagavatam, every couple months you come across something personal Prabhupada shares. It's okay, and we love it. Not unprecedented. So in this particular purport, again, he's referring to the parents who are complaining about the fact that he's making many modern-day Vaishnavas in America and Canada and South America and Europe, and these boys and girls who were, you know, generally those who joined the movement in the 60s were young people just out of high school or into college or maybe just finished college. I remember we used to think of Jayananda as an old man. Jayananda was 32 years old, you know, and to us youngsters who were 19 and 20, you know, 35 was really old. And Prabhupada was making mainly devotees from, you know, from the younger generation. So their parents, you can understand, we take their position, they're a little concerned, they've worked so hard to raise the boys and girls and spending money on their college education, and all of a sudden they get a telephone call, Hare Krishna, Mom. You're doing your homework? Yes, I'm studying Bhagavad Gita. So there was some difficulty like that, and sometimes they really complain. And there was some counter propaganda, you know, the anti-cult movements. It was mainly because of the parents. I remember my godmother Giriyar Swami. His father was a judge, a big judge, very powerful personality, very intelligent person, very highly placed in society. And he was very proud that his son Giriraj Swami also displayed the same intelligence. He got shining marks in high school. And he went on to one of the best colleges on the East Coast in America. And, you know, he met Srila Prabhupada, the modern-day Narada Muni. Actually, he had some interest in spiritual life, Giriraj Swami, although he was a very studious student. You know, he was really pursuing his law career. He wanted to become a lawyer, wanted to become a judge like his dad. But this was the 60s, and there was a lot of interest in spiritual life. You know, it was just a phenomena, a historical phenomena of those times that in America, a lot of people were spiritual seekers amongst the young. So he was also going to, you know, different yoga studios and different lectures by different swamis who were visiting America and kind of checking them out and trying to find a spiritual master and like this. And then he saw a poster that A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada was coming to Boston. So he didn't know who was Prabhupada, what was Hare Krishna, didn't know anything. He went to the hall to hear the lecture and he sat in the front seat. And after the lecture, he asked Prabhupada a question. He would always ask the swamis who came from India questions. You know, you inquire and you see if this person is actually knowledgeable. This person can actually guide me on the spiritual path to perfection. So every swami, he'd so raise his hand, he asked Prabhupada a question about, you know, am I God? Something like that. Prabhupada gave a very strong answer, and Giriraj Maharaj accepted it. And then that was that. And then Prabhupada left. And Giriraj Maharaj kept searching, but in the back of his mind, he kept thinking, that was a special Swami. So eventually, he gave up his studies and he joined the Boston Temple. And next time Prabhupada came to America and visited Boston, Greg Teton, later to be, eventually, Giriraj Swami was sitting in the front row again, you know, shaved up and saffron. And then Prabhupada gave a lecture and Greg raised his hand. And Prabhupada said, I know you. You're the one that asked the question last year in my class in the public hall. And Mara said, wow, you remember me? And Prabhupada said, yes. I saw you were a very nice boy, and I prayed to Krishna that you would become a devotee. So just like Krishna, satya sankalpa, whatever he desires, Krishna the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes, that will come to pass. So similarly, his pure devotee, unalloyed Uttamarakara devotee, what he desires, that will also come to pass. So you can imagine, Giriraj Maharaj is very sad. He became a devotee by the strong desire of Srila Prabhupada. So, yes, and then his father, the judge, heard about that. And he came to see his son, who he had envisioned, and you know, eventually to be in a three-piece suit, sitting at a great, you know, desk, a teak wood desk, you know, with secretaries and giving the orders and standing in court and defending the innocent and, you know, driving away in a Mercedes. And, you know, he comes from a wealthy family. He walked in the temple, and Giriraj Maharaj, you know, he's got old cotton saffron, one blue sock, one red sock. That's how we did it in those days. You know, they shaved his head. He's got a little cut here, and his sikhas are... Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. And his father was flabbergasted, just like Daksha. Daksha was flabbergasted that his sons, who were well-groomed boys on the way to becoming successful materialists, he was shocked. So Prabhupada's father was shocked. He said, "Son, come here, come here. Can we talk privately?" "Sure, Dad. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna." So they went to a room, and his father, you know, said, "What are you doing?" "Sarva dharma paricha ja nama kama hum tam sarva pape bhyo boksa masucha." "That's Sanskrit, Dad. That means I've surrendered my life to Krishna, not Krishna, to my guru, Srila Prabhupada." His father's like, "Oh my God, what's happened?" He took out his checkbook. And he wrote a check for $1 million. Now, in those days, that's like $1 billion. Nowadays, $1 million is not... In those days, in the 60s, that was a lot of money. You work 10, 20 years to make $1 million. He wrote $1 million. And he wrote down the name, my son, Greg Titan, the date, everything. He slid it across the table. Like in the movies, right? Slid it across the table. And he said, "My dear son, if you leave this movement now and you come home with me, I will sign that check." Giriraj Maharaj, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Jai Srila Prabhupada, Hare Krishna." Prabhupada was his spiritual father. And although, as devotees, we have so much respect for our parents, because without them we wouldn't have this body and the education and the intelligence that we had to choose to join this movement, so we're never disrespectful, we're always respectful. But the gift of Divya Gyan, transcendental knowledge, by which one can become freed from the repetition of birth and death and attain the Param Gati, highest goal of life, by going back to the spiritual world where all walking is dancing, all talking is singing, and there's a festival every day, whatever benedictions, whatever you can achieve in this world, pales in comparison to those blessings. Thinking like this, Giriraj Maharaj, just like in the movies, he took the pen and the check and pushed it back across the table. "I will never leave the lotus feet of my spiritual master." His father took the check, ripped it up, put his checkbook in it, and walked out and didn't speak to his son for many, many years. Later on, of course, as Giriraj Maharaj matured in Krishna consciousness and displayed all good qualities, then his mother and father took a different attitude like that. But just to show that the similarities, as Prabhupada said, this has been going on since time immemorial, it was there. Of course, it's only out of ignorance that parents in those days, perhaps even today, thought their children becoming devotees was a terrible thing. But as the world saw in due course of time, those children developed all the good qualities of the devatas. Titiksheva kunika shuridam shavadehinam achata shatavashanta sharva shudabhushanaha. The symptoms of a sadhu are that he is tolerant, merciful, friendly to all living entities, he has no enemies, he is peaceful, he abides by the scriptures, and sadhava sadabhushanaha. All his characteristics are sublime. Palina Parichate, we judge something by the results. So this movement, Prabhupada often used to say, this is authorized, this movement. But Palina Parichate, what's the proof? The proof is in the pudding. The proof of is the fact that devotees do transcend their materialistic natures and do display, in due course of time, divine qualities. This is the proof. Nevertheless, and against all reason, some parents in those days, they thought the materialistic life was a better option. Even if their children were involved in all types of nonsense activities, some parents thought that was better than becoming a Hare Krishna. I remember very clearly one time, I was going on Sankirtan in Amsterdam, book distribution. It was early in the morning. It was a marathon early in the morning, so I was out early, taking a bus somewhere in Sin City. And I was sitting next to a Dutchman who was reading a newspaper. And when I sat down, he actually moved over a little bit to give me a little more room. He was respectful. And as he started reading the newspaper, he started laughing out loud, which is unusual on a bus. He's laughing and laughing, and he looked at me and he said, boy, you got to read this. You got to read this. It's like, you know, people are kind of looking at us. And so he handed me the newspaper. It was in Dutch. I said, sir, I don't read Dutch. He said, no, the cartoon. Look at the cartoon. So the cartoon had, what, 5 or 6 little boxes to it. But it was also in Dutch. So I said, I can't read it. So he said, okay, I'll read the cartoon to you. So to summarize for you, the first little box, it's a young girl coming home from school. And she comes into the living room and her parents are watching television, and they're totally engrossed in the television, like glued. Their eyes are real big. You can see the artist do the eye, looking at the television. So much engrossed in watching whatever it was, soap opera or something. So the girl comes in, and she says, she puts her bags down, and she says, Mom, Dad, I failed my exams. And they're like so engrossed in the TV, they hardly hear, that's okay, honey. You know, the soap opera is almost over. We'll talk about it later. You know, I failed my exam. That's okay. So the next part of the cartoon, she comes home from school the next day. She puts her bags down. Mom and Dad are watching television. Mom, Dad, I'm so frustrated in life. I started taking drugs today. That's okay, honey. You're watching TV. Just leave us alone. We will talk about it later. Next day she comes home. Puts her bags in. Mom and Dad still watching the TV. Mom, Dad, I dropped out of school. That's okay, honey. Put your bags down. We'll talk about it later. Next day she comes home. Mom, Dad, I'm pregnant. It's okay. What'd she say? I don't know what she said, but that doesn't matter. Next day she comes home. She's dressed in a sari. She's got tilak, all bright faced. Put down her Bhagavad Gita. Mom, Dad, I gave up drugs, gave up all speculation. I'm vegetarian. I'm happy, I'm clean. Mom and Dad, I became a Hare Krishna. So the next cap, the next box, the parents, they turn around. What? What did you do? You crazy girl. They turn off the TV and they start preaching to her. So, you know, taking the drugs, getting pregnant, giving up, but as soon as she became a Hare Krishna. But such stories didn't always have that type of ending, because many times it was opposite. Later on, again, down the road, the parents would appreciate the good qualities that the Krishna conscious movement saved their children from these bad things. And often the parents would read the books to find out what crazy thing their kids were doing. And by reading those books, the parents became devotees. I know this is especially true in Eastern Europe, Ukraine, and Russia. Very often the children would become devotees, and then, you know, I come next year and the parents, you know, "Dear Guru Maharaj, can I have prana mantra?" You know, "Who are you?" I'm the mother of your disciple. You know? The phenomena that happens. They sometimes become devotees themselves. This is amazing. Just imagine Daksha. He's grumbling that his kids have become devotees. What happens if at the end of the Bhagavatam we find out he becomes a Hare Krishna devotee as well? Of course, Daksha is a very special personality. But there are many examples. This movement is so powerful. This chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. That sometimes those who were grumbling, like Daksha, by the potency of this movement, the parents also become. I remember Kartikeya. Kartikeya's mother was curious, just curious about her son's activities, just curious. And on her deathbed, she turned to her son Kartikeya, who was visiting her from the temple, and said, "So, my dear son, where is your Krishna now?" And she died. She was asking him, you know, because she was in distress. She wasn't a devotee necessarily. She just, you know, she was curious. So she said, you know, where is your Krishna now? She died. So Kartikeya went to the temple. Prabhupada was there, and he told Prabhupada the story. So Prabhupada said, "Oh, so she remembered Krishna at the moment of death. Your mother is liberated." So there's other examples like that as well. Actually, since it's okay to share some personal stories, that's part of the flavor of today's class, because Prabhupada shared with us some personal realizations and experiences, and here's purport. So following in the footsteps of my Guru Maharaj, I'll share with you a very quick story because time is coming to a close. But I'll share with you in brief the story of my mother. She was a little like Daksha, Dakshini. My mother was Phi Beta Kappa. For those of you American, you know what that means. Phi Beta Kappa, Stanford University. And my father also was, he was also very top of his class. Very intelligent parents. Sometimes my father used to say, "You know, we're so intelligent. What happened to you? You're at the beach surfing all day. You know, why don't you get good grades and become somebody in this world? I can predict you're going to be nothing in this world. You can't do anything in this world." Yeah, that's true. Sannyas means nothing to do with this world. But I didn't understand like that, but, you know. So my mother in particular, she was very, very, very intelligent woman. And she was a scientist in the 50s. And like many scientists, she was atheist. So in my family, we didn't go to church or anything like that. It was, you know, there were all these intellectual books around the house and philosophy and stuff like that. And of course, I never listened. I was always surfing, but, you know, and poetry, but no mention of God, nothing. So when I came home, I didn't tell my parents that I had become a devotee. I just, after 2 years, I walked down the driveway. And I can always remember my mother's face when she opened the door, and there I was, her son, you know, like this. She said, "What happened to you?" I said, "Mom, I became a Hare Krishna devotee. I believe in God." "You what? You believe in God? Come in, son. Let's have a little talk about this." And she was a very intelligent woman. And the first discussion we had, she defeated me. I had to go back to the temple. I got a little, some doubts in my mind. I had to go to the temple president, you know. But Mom says, but Prabhupada says, temple president. And he refreshed my memory, and, you know, by philosophy, I was able to understand. You know, there's always this debate. This has also been going on since time immemorial. Does God exist? Generally, the scientists are atheists. They explain everything through cold, mechanistic laws of nature, and there's no consciousness, there's no soul, there's no God. It's like that. So, to make a long story short, every year, out of respect for my mom and dad, my father subsequently passed away, but I would always go visit my mother. And every year on my birthday, May 20th, I would send my mother through the mail or order a dozen red roses. Usually you do that on someone's birthday, but she'd say, "Why are you sending me roses on your birthday?" I said, "Mom, you did all the hard work. You know, you gave birth to me. I just came out. And you raised me, and I appreciate that." You know, so I kept a good relationship with my mother. But every time we had these heated discussions, and sometimes it got, you know, I'd just stand up, I said, "I'm leaving." She said, "No, I'm leaving." You know, we had this relationship. And one year I brought her to Europe. She was getting older and, you know, living alone and elderly. So I brought her to Europe, and she said, "Oh, I really want to come to Europe." So I brought her, and, you know, and she said, "What hotel am I staying?" I said, "Mom, you're going to stay in the temple." She said, "Oh, no, I'm not going to do that." I said, "Yeah, you guys, I don't have enough money." So she stayed in the temple. And then one time I brought her to our farming community in France, New Mayapur. And she stayed in the chateau. She said, "At least it's a chateau." But her heart softened a little bit seeing the children, how the children were very special. You know, those who were born in devotee families, of course, it's not an ordinary birth. We don't take birth by chance. We take birth by dint of our past pious or impious activities. So our children are special. My mom could see that. So it kind of softened her heart a little bit. And my mom loved sweets. So I was temple president. And, you know, I took all the Mahaprasadam from our Radha Krishna deities every day. You know, the Mongol sweets and the noon offering, the 4 o'clock offering in the evening, and my mom ate sweets for 14 days. She loved it. She didn't know it was Mahaprasadam. And something happened. The last day before she left, she came to my office in a sari. And she said to me, "But don't think I'm an angel." She said, "I still don't believe in God." Something was there, I could see. Something, you know, Mahaprabhu, something. But she made a sworn statement, "I don't believe in God." "Okay, Mom, you know, I don't want to have this conversation again. We've had it 100 times. "All right, how do I look?" "Mom, you look like an angel." "No!" So then she went back. And then some years went, and I wasn't able to go home. I was too busy in Europe. And I was in London. And my mom was about 70, I think. I got a call one day. In the meantime, you know, I sent her all the books, you know, after she left France. And I sent her all the books, you know. I said, "Mom, you're reading the books?" "Hell no." Sorry. "I don't read those. I read Scientific American." Okay. So I sent her Gita, I sent her, you know, all the Bhagavatams, all the Chaitanya Charitamritas, you know, just hope against hope. Anyway, that's all I could do. So one evening I'm in, no, one night, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm in the office in London Temple, and the phone rings. And I answer the phone, and it's my mom. She said, son, I need to talk to you. I said, Mom, it's two o'clock in the morning, you know, because sometimes Mom would drink a little or a lot. So I said, Mom, have you been drinking? No, no, no. Mom, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, you're in San Francisco and I'm in London. She said, no, but I desperately need to speak to you. I said, Mom, you can wait a couple hours. She burst out, take me to Vrindavan, she said. You have been drinking, Mom. I said, I'll call you back in 4 hours when I wake up. And I just hung the phone up. You know, I was tired. The last thing she said to me, take me to Vrindavan. Mom, you've been drinking. So, you know, because the phone call was there, I got up late. I got up at like 5:30 or something, took a shower. And then I remember, was that a dream? Mom called me. So called her back, called the number back, and my brother answered the phone. I hadn't seen my brother in ages and ages and ages, and he didn't know anything about the Krishna conscious movement. So I said, hey, Pete, let me speak to Mom. So there was a silence. I said, Pete, let me speak to Mom. Silent. Are you still there? He said, Brian, Mom passed away a half hour ago. I said, what? Mom passed away a half hour ago. I said, no. I was just speaking to her a couple hours ago. He said, yeah, I was there. You hung up on her. I said, yeah, but she wanted to speak to you desperately. I said, yeah, but then I kind of calmed down, you know. Tears came to my eyes. You know, Mom, you know, human nature is there, right? We're transcendentalists, but, you know. So I said, wow. I said, I didn't know. Was there an accident? Did she slip and fall? He said, no. Mom's had cancer for the last year. She just didn't want to tell you because she considered your work too important. She did? Well, I don't know what you're doing, but Mom was just praising you day after day when I came to give her palliative care to help her with her cancer. She's talking about you all the time. She didn't want to disturb you because she thought what you're doing. Yeah, but I mean, she thought what I was doing was important. I said, what's going on? I said, you know, she didn't want to disturb you. So I said, well, gosh, you know, wow. She had cancer, yeah. I said, well, did she say anything before she died? He said, yeah, Mom did say a few things. My brother said, it's a little confusing for me. He said, I was sitting with her here 30 minutes ago, and she turned to me, and I could tell she was going to die, and she said to me, Peter, don't lament for me. I'm not this body. I'm a spirit soul. And I said, wait a minute, that's the philosophy I'm following. Oh, he said, oh, well, what are you? I said, I'm practicing a spiritual tradition from India, my dear brother, and Krishna consciousness. And in our philosophy, we're not the body, we're the soul. Yeah, that's what Mom said. She looked at me and she chastised me. Don't cry for me, I'm not this body, I'm the soul. But I said, wait a minute, Mom was a scientist. She didn't believe in God. Well, you want to know what her last words were? I said, yeah. She said, don't lament for me, I'm not this body. I'm going to Krishna. And whoever that is, that's the last word she said. So I remember the pastime with Prabhupada saying to Kartikeya, your mother is liberated, you know. So then I started crying. Not because, well, yes, because my mother had passed away, but more so because my spiritual master had somehow touched the heart of my mother. And she'd come in, so I asked my brother, I said, yeah, but how is it that Mom knew that philosophy and had that conviction? That he said, well, she'd been reading the books for 1 year. I said, what books? You know all those books you mailed home all the time? We're getting all these packages with the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya-mamrita. Whenever these books would come, I'd just tell Mom and I put them in the garage. And they were just collecting dust there, and grease. But after Mom found out she had cancer, you know, it was a shock for her. And she was trying to figure out, you know, what's life all about? And I couldn't tell her anything. I don't know. I'm just her son. So one day, Mom's in the rocking chair. He told me about 11 months ago outside, trying to think about life. And she said to me, to my brother, go out in the garage and get one of those books your brother sent home. So I went, there were so many books, so eeny, meeny, miny, mo, and I just picked up one called the Bhagavad Gita. And I gave it to Mom. There must have been something in that book because she read that book day and night. She read that book and she was particularly impressed with not the first two lines, but all the lines that come afterwards. I said the purports. Yeah, the purports. She said she really liked those. She said because that answered all her questions. But still, she had some things she couldn't really understand. He said, I'll send you that Bhagavad Gita. It's got all these lines and little arrows going here and little comments, you know. She wore that book out. I said, really? But when she didn't understand something, you know what she did? She mailed to your tape ministry, because in those days we had the cassettes, remember? And I had a tape ministry with all my lectures, like, you know, whatever, 500, 1,000 lectures. She'd have me, you know, mail your tape ministry, like, who are you anyway, brother? And she would get these tapes, and I bought Mom a tape recorder. You know, Mom wasn't very, you know, technology, but I got her a tape recorder and headphones, and she'd sit all day long in her rocking chair listening to whatever's on those tapes, back and forth, and eventually she was just nodding her head. Whatever she didn't understand in Bhagavad Gita, she listened to your lectures. So he said, I think that has something to do with her last words. I said, yes, my brother, it sure does. So that's what happened to my mom. She was a scientist, an atheist. She didn't believe. We argued the fact. But Prabhupada's purports enlightened that woman, convinced her of the superiority of this Divya Gyan transcendental knowledge. So I flew home for the funeral ceremony. And before we had that ceremony, I went to the funeral home because Mom was cremated. And I had $800 to pay for the cremation and so forth. So I went to the desk and I said, to pay for my mother's, I wasn't here, I said, but my brother arranged, you've cremated my mom. So thank you very much, you know, for spreading her ashes over the ocean. And the man looked at me and said, oh, she said, sir, I'm so sorry. We cremated your mom, but somehow something happened. We haven't actually, you know, put her ashes in the ocean yet. He said, I'm so sorry. I know how bad you must feel. He said, look, just keep the money, keep the $800, and we'll put the ashes in the ocean tomorrow. I said, no, give me the ashes. So I had the ashes in my $800. I went to the airport, San Francisco airport. This was in Marin County. I went to the airport. There was a seat on the plane. I flew to Delhi, got in a taxi, came here, because I had a visa from previous, still a good visa, came here, walked down to the Jamuna, walked out, had the ashes, said, Mom, if you can hear me, I'm fulfilling your last words to me, which were, son, take me to Vrindavan. And and I poured the ashes into the river, and I fulfilled my mom's last desire. So I don't know what destination she must have achieved. You know, her heart was to come here after reading Prabhupada's purports, and little association with me, but it was really Srila Prabhupada. How powerful Prabhupada's purports are. That's why he wanted these books distributed here, there, and everywhere, because the potency is there. My mom achieved some great destination. I think I'm still here struggling, you know, in Arjuna Vritti, trying to come to the stage of Arjuna. And, you know, remembering, echoing the words of Prabhupada to Kartikeya, who his mother just said, "Where is your Krishna now?" My mom said, "I'm going to Krishna." So sometimes I pray to her that, you know, you're somewhere superior to who I am. You please look down and bless me that I can also achieve, by Prabhupada's mercy, the Param Gatim, the supreme destination. Grantara Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Srila Prabhupada Ki Sri Goloka Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Sisi Gornitai Ki Krishna Balarama Ki Sisi Varasyam Sundar Ki Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Jai Sri Radhe. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.